Members, the K-12 Education Policy and Oversight Committee will come to order. We are at quorum. And Representative Faust, would you be willing to move the minutes from our previous meeting?
I would love to move the minutes of the last meeting.
From March 16th. All those in favor of the minutes of the March 16th meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Before us today, we have House File 3421, which is Representative Mariani's bill on high school assessments. Representative Mariani, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, excuse me, I'll move that House File 3521 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a recommendation that it move on to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Great. We have a series of testifiers here today before us, and so we will give them the opportunity to come forward and give us some information about the bill. But before that, would you like to do a walkthrough on the delete everything?
Mr. Chair.
And would you like us to take that up first, the delete everything?
Mr. Chair, members, I would move the A6 amendment. This essentially will put the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before the committee today.
So Representative Mariani moves the A6 amendment to get the bill in the format that he would like to present it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Mariani to the A6 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I have a further amendment to the A6 amendment. Just a few little things I want to that we didn't catch earlier. So this would be the A9 amendment, members. So the A9 amendment amends the A6 amendment. And these are mostly technical. There is a line 1.4 and 1.5. We delete the word advanced, and I'll explain that a little later as I walk through the bill.
Any discussion, members? All right. Representative Mariani moves the A9 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the A9 amendment is adopted. Representative Mariani.
Chair, members, I woke up feeling pretty this morning, so I'm going to try to put on a happy face and try to exercise some energy here for you, because I think that this is actually a pretty exciting move, assuming that the legislature adopts, along with the executive branch, what's encompassed in the 3521 bill. First, I want to commend the commissioner of education and her staff for drafting House File 3421. It reflects a commitment to a different vision for assessing our K-12 students against high academic standards. And it also reflects honoring the work of the task force, the College and Career Readiness Task Force, which was a collaboration of educators and community leaders that was brought together per our direction and as a result of last year's bill and under the commissioner's staffing and guidance. And they were brought together to design the broad contours of what this new assessment system could look like in Minnesota. The task force, as you know, was co-chaired by Dr. Dirk Madsen of the department and Kent DeKell of the University of Minnesota. And I spent many months hanging out with this crew in the interim, wrestling with some pretty important issues, so that my colleague Representative Breiner and Senators Wigger and Rummel as well. Just to let you know, sort of part some of my broad values in terms of approaching this work is that I think it's important for us to think about our assessment system more than just measuring outcomes. That's absolutely important. It's important for lots of different reasons. Sometimes those reasons are kind of clash with one another, but I think it is an important activity. Nonetheless, what we should also, in my mind, constantly be mindful is that whatever we do, it should be about enhancing the educational outcomes of our students and enhancing the quality of that educational, of that learning environment. I think House File 3421 moves us more in toward that balance of making sure we have a rigorous, valid assessment system, measuring system, that contributes and brings value to the learning environment. I also think, members, that it's quite frankly hubris for us to think about designing systems that look great on paper, look, looks like it ought to be working, without having a discussion of the relationship between those approaches and the resources needed to support students as we demand higher expectations of them, which this does. This demands college and career readiness standards. And so part of what's infused in the task force's work and in the A6 amendment here are ways in which we continue to keep alive that discussion and that exploration of the combination of supports and resources for students in schools, along with a rigorous assessment system. And then finally, members, and this has kind of been a little bit of a journey for me, as you know, based on last year's bill on the grad test, the math grad test, where I was had gotten increasingly nervous about the high stakes nature of our assessment system, particularly as it impacted our students. I thought then, and actually still do, that the way we did that was really skewed, and that we were basically having students shoulder the consequences, if you will, of our assessment system almost solely. I do think stakes are good. I do think high stakes are good. But I do think that in order for them to be good, that they should be contingent on using powerful formative assessment tools in the learning process, so that we're not just wishing that students could do well, but we're actually providing the opportunities and also providing the tools for their educators to have them achieve at a high level. So those are, you know, just broad values that guide my thinking about this. The A6 amendment shares the commitments of the commissioner and the task force. It poses a few important principles for the legislature to be guided by. One, to be guided by the task force recommendations. So part of what I did with the A6 is I infused back some of the recommendations of the task force that were not present in the original drafting of the bill. We also want to maximize the expertise of the advisory assessment group that's created in the bill. And then we also want to set a very transparent direction that we own as a legislature, that's clear in both in statute and in rule. And the reason for the rule part is because there are details here that even the task force struggled with, and before we march off into enshrining into statute some of those issues that they struggle with, I thought it would be wise to authorize a rulemaking process by which we can get better answers to those important details that will need to be done anyway if we implement the new system. So let me just point out then specifically the differences. We walked through the bill last week. We heard from the task force. And so I just want to point out where the major different areas are. I mentioned earlier the importance of using formative assessment tools. And members, I think we have passed this out before. I'm pretty sure this is the report of the Access work group. You probably didn't bring it with, but I do encourage you to refer back to this document. It's pretty concise and pretty clear. So on page 13 and 18 of that document, they spoke about the importance of using and implementing formative assessment tools, including formative assessment benchmarks and item bank tools. And you'll find that on lines 4.21, 4.27 of the A6 amendment. Then on 5.9 and 5.10 of the amendment, the task force had talked about this series of end of course framework as a phase one and phase two process. And so the phase one would be our current MCA tested embedded content areas, and then teeing up what we have already set out in statute into the near future, geometry, chemistry, and physics. And what the task force really wanted to do was to create a dynamic where we were learning and applying what we're learning from using the end of course framework in phase one to inform how we would then move forward with the phase two components. And so in the amendment, you'll see that I'll direct the commissioner to withhold moving forward with the end of course application to those three subject areas until authorization. And so that's different than what the department has put before us, where they're moving, albeit, you know, in a softer way. They're moving toward implementation of that, what the task force called phase two content areas. And then, as you recall, in the language arts, the reading and writing, the task force and the commissioner does call for a comprehensive test that, you know, separates out the reading and writing. The task force really struggled with this issue, and I think it's wise that they decided not to use their end of course framework for that. However, they thought it was really important to have a rigorous process that they spelled out for setting the cut score for the language arts reading and writing test based on 2 years of data analysis. And so you'll find that on 2.18 through 2.28. The amendment was also guided by this notion, as I mentioned, of really utilizing this assessment advisory committee. And we agree with the, I agree with the department and the task force on this. What the A6 amendment does, it asks them to do more than just monitor the implementation of the new design, as important as that is, but also to monitor student outcomes based on state support available to districts and students. And so again, the idea is that what I mentioned earlier, that we should be engaged in a process where we're not just looking at, you know, the sort of the non-living frameworks, and this is going to be a horrible metaphor, of the construct here, but the living framework, you know. So what is it that you need to infuse, you know, this design with in order to properly support students and teachers? And so we want the advisory task committee to also consider and monitor those questions. We also asked the advisory committee on 5.2 to 6.5 to develop recommendation on alternative methods for students to meet the reading, writing, and the algebra biology requirements, as opposed to our authoritatively citing those in statute. I have to say, I think that the task force clearly wanted to have the ability to use those alternative assessments and name several of them, you know, the SAT, the ACT. But I also, by sitting in, sense that there are a lot of complicated questions in terms of using so many different instruments that I think need more shaping to make sure that it aligns with our standards and is in fidelity with our assessment approach here. And so we're asking the advisory committee, as opposed to in the original bill where we're just authorizing to go ahead and use those, we're asking the advisory committee to vet that out more and then come back to the commissioner and to the legislature, I think including possibly, I'll have to check rulemaking recommendations once they've been able to vet those through more carefully than we had the chance to in the task force over the last few months. And then finally, at 6.22 to 7.6, I mentioned earlier that the A6 amendment uses a directive to the department to engage in rulemaking to be able to flesh out some of the more obvious but important and important details in implementing this new design. And so there's a list of six such areas that we're directing the department to vet out through rulemaking: the definition of college and career readiness, the administrative structure, criteria, and process for implementing a state-level student appeals process, the definitions of misaligned and highly misaligned, and how the alignment index is calculated, among others. And so I've taken I have to say, and I've said this before in committee, that I jealously guard the legislature's equal authority in terms of speaking on public policy. And so this really also reflects my sense that we should be as clear and transparent as possible and own the key elements of the new design here by speaking both in statute and directing in rulemaking. I think it places Minnesota in a really strong position that its legislature has that kind of ownership, that kind of detailed, not overly detailed. I think the department needs to be able to do what it needs to do, but that when it comes to key important areas here that we're speaking to the people of Minnesota and to the nation, which becomes an increasingly important thing, as we talked about last week, relative to this emerging national discussion around common standards and shared assessments. So, Mr. Chair, members, that in a quick run through is the A6 amendment. There are some other minor, perhaps not super minor, but there are some other changes. I just wanted to highlight some of the bigger changes. I did mention in the second amendment that I had struck the words advanced, and I would certainly entertain a discussion with the committee. This had to do with a describer for the algebra content area. And as you know, right now, we have the Algebra 1 expectation for high school graduation and then the coming Algebra 2 expectation as well. We had a very rich discussion in the task force that really helped me to understand that that there isn't really this bright line between Algebra 1 and Algebra 2, that you're really talking about a continuum of knowledge with strands that are commonly thought of as existing in Algebra 2 that are important for being able to demonstrate Algebra 1 mastery. And so the original bill talked about, I think the department recognized this, and so the original bill is supposed to talk about Algebra 1 and Algebra 2, talked about advanced algebra. It may be just a semantic issue. I got a little nervous that if we say advanced algebra, we're saying Algebra 2, and I don't think that is not what we're saying. We're talking about this continuum between Algebra 1 and Algebra 2, but it's not a major issue. It's just an important issue to lay out for folks, and I'm open to people's interpretations and discussions on that. So, Mr. Chair and members, that's the A6 amendment. I entertain questions. We have folks here in the audience from the task force as well as the department here who can help respond to some of the questions, I suspect.
With that, we do have some questions from members. Representative Obermiller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, one of the issues that I was concerned about was whether or not, I know we took out the issue of qualifying for other, you know, by getting an international baccalaureate or those ACT forks and pushed it into the committee of things to consider. Does college and schools fit into that category as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Obermiller, it does. And we do reference to the citation for CIS.
Okay, thank you.
With that, I think we'll move on to some of our testifiers. We have quite a comprehensive list, and we will invite up Jordan Rasmussen from Fergus Falls High School.
Mr. Chair, while Jordan comes up, I want to acknowledge that he was here a couple weeks ago as a high school page, and this young man was moved by the testimony at the time, and I had asked if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to comment or testify on the bill, and Mr. Rasmussen, I think that was you, wasn't that you?
Yeah,
I thought so. Jumped up and gave us his opinion. I think we were richer for it. And so all that by way of saying that here's a young man who's got some important things to say and obviously someone that we should watch.
Welcome to the committee. Just state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jordan Rasmussen, and I'm currently a junior at Fergus Falls Public High School. Mr. Chair and members, I come before you today mainly in favor of House File 3421 or the access system. However, I do have one major concern which will be addressed in an amendment proposed by Representative Nornes. That concern is in regards to end-of-course assessments composing 25% of a student's grade. In this, In the amendment that Representative Nornes will offer, that number is changed from 25% to 20%. Even though the new system proposed in this bill will not affect me, I still feel it is my duty to give a high school student's perspective, because no high school students were members of the task force, and the only time students were approached was after the current proposal was written. The reason I wish to lessen the impact these assessments will have on students' grade is because I feel that we can still gather accurate and useful data and curb grade inflation without some of the unintended consequences that would be present in the current proportion. First, let's take a look at the main reasons why the task force wished the assessment to have an impact on students' grades. For my conversations with Mr. Carney, who was a member of the task force, and for reading the Access proposal, the main reasons were to curb grade inflation and make the exams high stakes so teachers and students took them seriously. Grade inflation is a problem at my school and many others around the country and needs to be addressed. Changing the proportion from 25% to 20% will still keep grade inflation in check and allow the main grade inflation combating mechanism, the alignment index, to remain just as effective. As a high school student, I've never taken a test that's been worth more than 20% of my grade, and I would be very surprised if many students have taken one that has been close to 25%. I know that almost all of my peers and I would take an exam very seriously that made up 20% of our grade in that class, because it could easily change an entire letter grade. Now that we've discussed how changing the proportion from 25% to 20% will still achieve the main goals of the task force, we can move on to some of the unintended consequences of having these assessments have such a huge impact on students' grades. First, I believe that having such a large proportion of the student's course grade based on one exam will cause students undue anxiety around finals, especially in cases where students may have to take multiple end-of-course exams. This will pressure teachers into giving practice exams and questions to their students to help them prepare for these exams, instead of learning new material. Also, many teachers at the high school level do not give finals, but instead assign a large in-depth research project. These projects have huge educational benefits, but I fear that we will see them disappear when teachers stress preparing students for these exams. When trying something new, such as the Access system, I would not suggest jumping in the deep end. According to Mr. Papal, the co-chair of the task force, 25% would be at the high end of what other states are and have done. He also stated that most states that have a similar program have the proportion ranging from 10 to 15%. The Access program is set up to have a 5-year transition period before it goes into full effect. I think it would be wise to start close to the parameters of what other states have done to begin with. Then, after the program is in effect, it would be relatively easy for the legislature to adjust that number higher if the desired results were not achieved. Mr. Chair and members, I hope that you will consider the amendment proposed by Representative Nornes, because I feel that in the end, it will make the Access program more successful by achieving the intended goals of the task force while avoiding some of the unintended consequences. I may not have a PhD in education, but I would consider myself an expert at being a high school student and understanding the effects this proposed legislation will have on high schools and the students they serve. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for your time this morning and allowing a high school student to be a part of this important discussion. Mr. Chair, I would now be more than willing to answer any questions that your members may have.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Rasmussen, for that testimony. We do have at least one question here. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rasmussen, you're very persuasive. And you would have persuaded me to vote for 10 or 15%. So I'm wondering why you went up from the original amendment of 10 to 20.
Mr. Rasmussen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, I'd originally proposed a 10 to 15% because that's within the margin of what most states have. But I just talked with Representative Nornes, and he felt that 20% might have a better chance of getting passed, and maybe it would be a better compromise.
Representative, follow up, or?
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair and Mr. Rasmussen, I think you would have had a good chance perhaps with your other amendment as well.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Representative, if anybody else would be willing to propose that amendment, I would be very pleased with that.
All right. He's good.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Rasmussen, for being willing to come and testify before our committee and for all the thought and research that you've evidenced in your testimony. And I really appreciate the way you've challenged us to think about this. I think we made a similar challenge to the department last year when they originally proposed their end of course, proposal. So I'm giving it a great deal of thought, but my question to you is, what is the basis for your assertion that the moving to a 20% end of course requirement would still allow the alignment index to function at the same level?
Mr. Rasmussen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Briner, I think that how the alignment index is working, and I think one of the major reasons why they put in this initial percentage was to create sort of a high-stakes situation for students so that all students who take this test would feel compelled to do their best. Now, I believe in high school you have three different types of students when it comes to taking this test. The first group care about their grades, they do well in school, and they're not worried about failing this test, but they're still going to try their hardest regardless. The second group of students are down at the lower portion of the spectrum, and they still care about the test too because they don't want to have to take that course again or fail one of the tests. Now, that middle group of students is what I believe this 25 or 10 to 15% is proposed for, which are the group of students that are going to do well enough to pass, but they might not try their hardest on it. Now, I still feel that 20% is a huge portion of their grade, and I've in all my years in high school, I've never seen a teacher give out a test that is a final even that has had that large of your grade attached to it. And I think almost every student that I know takes finals seriously, even if they're worth 10 to 15%.
Representative Briner.
Thank you for that thoughtful response. What I'd ask you to consider, and I won't ask you to respond to this now, is it'll be a question, I think, of the statistical significance of the end of course exam as a portion of the grade in relation to developing the alignment index. In other words, not just how important the student considers the test, but how much evidence we have that the test reflects the student's performance in the course. So I think that there's a question for test development experts to answer there, but I think that's why the department proposed the 25%, and also the committee who worked on this debated that for about 9 months, so there was a lot of consideration given into the weight of that test, and I still will thoughtfully listen to the amendment, but I think that there's some mathematical and measurement considerations behind that that we haven't spoken to yet.
Any other questions from members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
It might be appropriate to ask the department to speak to the issue of the 25% along with Representative Reiner's line of thinking.
If there's a representative from the department that would like to testify about the 25% ratio. Welcome, Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about the 25% requirement. Mr. Rasmussen mentioned his opinion that this would have students have a lot of pressure as far as, taking this end-of-course test seriously. One of the things that we wanted to balance, and I think Representative Mariani mentioned this, it's also the balance and the responsibility of the school district to also deliver the instruction that needs to be delivered in the classroom. We did not want to have all of the burden on the student with the 25%. And of course, we also wanted to make sure that there was no grade inflation, that also the curriculum, the standards that were reflected in this course were actually being taught to the students. So we wanted to have this fairness, and that's why we had had this the alignment, and we had the this percentage. And we, as I talked to you all before, when we first presented the bill, it was about balance and making sure that the system was held accountable. Also, we wanted to make sure the teachers were taking this seriously in these two core subject areas that are three actually that we are going to have the students taught. We want to make sure that the alignment is there. As you remember, there's going to actually be 4 years where we're going to look at highly misaligned alignment, not, and we want to give teachers the flexibility of having some ability to look at the students' work throughout the year and have that flexibility. But if you have a student that has failed the end of course but is getting an A, you know that there's high misalignment there, or a D and an A, et cetera. So we want to make sure, and I know you all want that too, that there is no grade inflation. Representative Brainerd mentioned the 9 months of discussion and trying to come to something that we felt was robust but also fair. And that's why we talked about, you know, having a little consequence in here too, to make everyone take this really seriously and not put everything on the student.
Thank you, Commissioner Segrin. Representative Loon.
Thank you. Commissioner, if you wouldn't, my question may be best addressed to you, so thank you. Can you talk a little bit, and I've had a chance to look through the task force work, but not in perhaps as great a detail as I'd like. The decision to go with a percent of the class grade for the test versus a my choice of words, rather aggressive cut score and just reporting score on the test and whether or not that passes. Could you talk about sort of the rationale of going one way rather than the other?
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, that might be more of a question to ask Representative Mariani or some of the others that were on the work group. My understanding and the reason why I accepted the 25% as part of the course grade was that this really actually brought all of us together as a system to deliver the instruction. That because we have really robust standards now in math, we will be shortly having our ELA revised. We've just finished our science standards, so we've got this transition into college and career readiness standards, and if we have 25% of a course that is going to be attributed to the test, that probably is equivalent to a very substantial cut score, if not more. And then also we have the ability now to look at what's going on in those courses because of the alignment index that the task force actually recommended too. So we really have some, I think, pretty innovative, and I think we're going to be nation leading in this as we look at making sure that our system is delivering what kids need, our students are knowing what their expectations are. And as we're moving through this transition period to work this through, that's why I ultimately respected the recommendations. And, you know, I certainly think that we should stick with the 25%. I think we should continue to work on how we're going to craft the alignment index. As I said, the highly misaligned would be that really those outliers that we should hold the system accountable to. So I think it is a pretty strong recommendation. That's why I did it, but you probably need the benefit of the rationale that they came to.
Thank you, and I would be interested in hearing that, Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani.
And Representative Loon, I think the Commissioner articulates a consistent line of thought with the task force on this. I think we were really intrigued with doing things differently that had to do with powerfully aligning the grading practices of our teachers with the end of course exam. And I think it felt that if we're setting you know, a drop dead cut score here, that you're in some ways recreating the existing system, which doesn't really call forth that kind of dynamic relationship between teachers' gradings and our current use of comprehensive testing. And so I think that the sort of the promise here, I think it is innovative. To my knowledge, I don't think anyone else has done this across the nation yet. The innovative part here is how do we evoke a ownership on the part of our instructors relative to the exam itself without creating a situation where the exam just simply trumps, you know, their actions relative to grading and assessing their students through other methods. We think that holds much promise. We have to be consistent in our approach here. We think that the teacher is the most important in-school variable in delivering instruction, and I think this honors that in terms of aligning the grading with the exam.
Yeah, thank you. And if I could just
follow up, Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Follow up. You know, I would concur. I think we're moving in a good direction in terms of trying to ensure that the students are presented and provided an opportunity to learn and master the material that we want them to learn, and to demonstrate that learning as part of their path to graduation from high school in Minnesota. But I also wonder if you could comment on. I guess just a concern that I have, and I guess it's when I look at the timelines we've established very personally. My youngest child is a seventh grader this year, so this will be her class will be debuting this if we move forward with this, about an opportunity and sort of the expectation that the school districts will step up and begin preparation now for those students in those seventh and eighth grade years for preparation, because I do have concerns where our efforts in that are much directed at our high school juniors and then seniors for these, and whether or not we're adequately measuring mastery in the lower grades in preparation for these steps. You know, these are very high stakes for our students, and I think that's appropriate, but then again, if we don't have equivalent high stakes of mastery in the lower grades, some of those issues compound themselves, and that's a lot of pressure for schools and teachers and students and parents in the last perhaps year or so of high school. So.
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair and members, that's an excellent question, Representative Loon. And I'm going to start with reminding you all about our TIMSS test here a few 2 years ago, or actually 3 years ago now. That our students took, and it was done in 2007. In 2003, we had our second iteration of the MCA2s, and those fourth graders that scored like had the biggest gain in the world, third largest gain in the world, and were up there almost like third or fourth in the world as far as their scores, was because they had been taught from kindergarten on the exact standards, and when our teachers teach those and they're teaching a curriculum that's aligned to the standards, they deliver and the kids deliver. And our eighth grade kids, your example, didn't benefit from all of that teaching, but they had some of it and did very, very well. So we're transitioning now into this next generation. But what we are doing and what we have started to do already, we remember you have funded the Math and Science Academy. So last year, we had math and science academies that, or math academies that were going on all over the state. They are aligned also with our higher ed institutions, and they started with 5th, 6th, and 7th grade because we know that that's the biggest change in our new MCA3s in preparation for Algebra 1 in 8th grade, Algebra 2 in high school. So we've already started to train teachers, helping them to align their curriculum, and we're also looking at putting the wow factor into teaching mathematics, too, so the kids are more engaged. We will be doing that again this summer. We'll be doing the academies again, and then we will also be bringing on the online, bringing online the science academies so that we can start working with teachers there. In addition to that, we have what is called the Survey of Enacted Curriculum. It's kind of a wonky title, but teachers in mathematics can actually go on to computer and enter what is in their curriculum that they are teaching in mathematics, and up will pop a map that lays the standards over their curriculum and shows the holes where they may be missing some of the standard instruction. So we have tools out there that are available for teachers to use, and we will continue to develop those and refine those and work with our school districts and our curriculum people so that our teachers will be prepared. They have been on notice. They do know that they have to move to these new standards, and we're going to be doing everything we can as a department to make sure that we facilitate that.
Mr. Chair, just
Representative Mariani.
Very quickly, another slice at this is in the bill we've got the assessment advisory committees, and the full expectation that that be a, an empowered committee that can offer again both its insights on the implementation process as we move forward, but also to be able to, at least in the A6 amendment, to be able to have good discussions and good vetting about the kind of supports that the students and systems need relative to this new framework. So our hope isn't, our design here isn't just to throw something out there and hope that it sticks. You know, there, we're obviously, you know, we have to move aggressively. I mean, we've got, expectations of stature. We have more that are coming. We've got an NCLB and their expectations. And so part of what's happening here, I think, is sort of this delicate balance. We're trying to move forward assertively at the same time that we're carefully vetting with experts in Minnesota on everything from the mechanical, if you will, implementation of the system out to the discussions about, so what's there or not there inside our schools that can maximize the results. So how, for instance, how do we expand the SciMath teacher, for as an example, academies, principals academy, et cetera. So I think, you know, that's what I talked about earlier. I think that this is more than just the design. You know, it's really meant to be a real living kind of dynamic in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe a comment to set the stage for my question. So I'm really conflicted on this approach. On the one hand, extremely supportive because we've started to track outcomes, and now we're seeing that certain things have to be broken because we're not getting the outcomes, so we're kind of moving back up into the process, and we're starting to tighten down and actually measure more frequently and provide tools so that during the course of the educational process we measure and control and tighten things down to the point where we get the outcomes we want. So, you know, I like all that. I mean, that's just kind of good systems thinking, and I think we've done this in a very professional and thoughtful way with all the stakeholders. So in general, I like the concept, but there's something that just hangs in the back of my mind, and that is, so we're going back up into the process and trying to fix everything, and then it feels like we take our foot off the gas a little bit on measuring the outcomes here. And so my question is, and it's related to this amendment specifically, I mean, could not a student literally fail, get a zero, not even show up on every single one of these end of course tests and still graduate? And so I guess maybe that's the very direct question is, you know, how do we reconcile this with really saying we have high standards and outcomes at the end? Maybe that's not possible. Maybe there's other mitigating circumstances that I'm not aware of. So that's the question, and then maybe address the broader topic of how does this really kind of keep our foot down on accountability and outcomes.
Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm not a psychometrician, so it might be a good question in terms of the science of a direct answer to, you know, what the statistics are of that happening. But I would say that part of the introduction of the alignment index, in many ways, is also meant to address this issue. In other words, if we're seeing what intuitively looks like, you know, outcomes that seem to don't make sense here, then the idea is to have this alignment index to be able to vet that through, to be able to have the engagement with, you know, Teacher Downey at so-and-so school in terms of, so what's going on here? Mr. Pacow earlier had talked about in his presentation that discussion is a discussion that needs to happen more and more. And when he was at the St. Paul School District, you know, they had begun to have those discussions in terms of aligning teachers' gradings with outcomes of students relative to comprehensive tests and perhaps other indicators of success. So I think the alignment index is supposed to get us there. Do we take our foot off the gas a little bit? We did that last year. We postponed the math grad tests for another 4 years here. This actually lowers or puts our foot back down on the gas at a little bit more. I think your point's well taken. But I think we've tried to address that through the creation of this alignment process.
Commissioner, would you like to respond to that as well?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Downey, you're right. A student could flunk the end of course test and get a D in the course and graduate from high school. And that would not be there would be no high misalignment in that area. Yeah, a student could walk across the stage getting a D in all of their courses like they do now. I think what the committee was trying to do and what they struggled with, and please others can, chime in that we're part of this committee. The other position was to set a minimum cut score, something that was fairly low, but would indicate probably a D or D minus or D plus level or something. I mean, we're talking grade levels here. We don't talk about that when we're doing standard setting, but just to kind of get our heads wrapped around it. As I listened to read the recommendations and tried to talk to people who were involved in this discussion, what I weighed was, do we set a cut score that's kind of a low cut score that would say, okay, kids can still walk across the stage with equivalent of a D plus or something, or do we have more of an end of course test? That was 25% of the grade that was really, reflective of robust standards that would also allow us to get inside of the classroom and make sure that the class that was being taught was aligned to the standards, that we looked at any potential grade inflation, that we brought more reality and rigor to that classroom. You can't do that with a cut score. I mean, a cut score is a cut score, and it's all on the kid. There's no accountability for the system. And so that's what kind of swayed me. I went back and forth on it. But eventually, I thought if we want a balanced system, that this at least got at it. Now, there's teachers here in this room that, may have a different opinion than I do about it, and certainly respect that. But I tried to balance it. But yes, could a kid, just squeak by and get, yes, they still could. But they probably could either way. If we set a minimum cut score, there would still be that, lots of kids would still. But the other thing that convinced me too is, for the first time, all of our kids in the state are going to be taking Algebra 1 or its equivalent, and they're going to have to take Algebra 2 or its equivalent in high school. And not all kids are required to do that. And if they are attempting that and working hard, they have learned more information than they would have under the current system that is letting a lot of our kids take general math courses and telling them that that's okay too. So I'd rather have a kid struggle really hard with Algebra 2 and absorb at least some of that knowledge than never have the opportunity to be exposed to that at all. So those were some of my thoughts and rationale. I don't know that it comforts you any, but those were some of the thought processes I went through.
Follow-up, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be brief. So it actually does give me a lot of comfort, and I'm not trying to denigrate this process or this bill. I very likely will vote for it overall. I am really concerned, though, when we talk about reducing the percentage of this. I'm probably going to vote against this amendment for that reason. Just thinking of my own kids, one in particular, and their constant tendency to follow the path of least resistance, and the necessity of parents and the system to, at various points, put up a high bar. And you know, we have this, I think, broader debate or discussion about, you know, the purpose of schools. Is it really college and career readiness, or is it, you know, creating citizens that can advance our democracy? And we're very much on a STEM track here, and college and career readiness is really what we're getting at. So I think I support this for now. But, you know, I just think about in my business and in life in general, there's always points in time where you just flat out have to produce. You know, an airplane takes off. It's all got to work. You know, you deliver the final report on a project. It's all got to come together, and you got to perform. So I don't know that somehow creating a 12-year experience where that isn't the case, and I'm not saying we are, but I want to be really cautious on that and make sure that there are at some critical points in time, and it seems to me high school, where you really got to display some proficiency, that we shouldn't back off here. And so I'd argue, frankly, I'd probably argue for having a higher percentage as compared to lower. So I'll leave that as a comment if others want to respond.
Representative Briner.
You're calling on me, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Well, I won't take too much time here because I think the Commissioner and Representative Mariani have gotten to the heart of the matter. But my comments address one aspect of Representative Loon's question as well as your comments, Representative Downey, and that's a lot of the disagreement about the high-stakes testing has been around the single measure in a single moment of time. And what we have here in an end-of-course approach is a multiple-measure approach that still gives, that is looking for high alignment between the test, both the measure and the content and the coursework. So it's looking for that high standard, but it's allowing the classroom relationship that occurs between teacher and student to produce that evidence of performance in a variety of manners. And as we know, some students who are high flyers in class aren't always high flyers on that test-taking experience. So it gives a broader range of opportunity for a student to show their achievement. I don't think it's reducing the standard at all. And I think over time, this is one of the things we'll learn about if we watch the data with the alignment index, and if we start to watch how these scores correlate with ACT scores and other measures, we're going to learn whether it's parallel to what we're doing now, a lower standard than what we're doing now, or higher. But I have the point of view, and I think many members of our task force have the point of view, that this may produce a higher standard.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for the Commissioner. I'm not fully clear on this alignment index. I hear the term, but I'm not clear on what it is. But I'm wondering if you could share what other states' experience have been in developing and implementing an alignment index.
Representative Mariani?
Mr. Chair, the suggestion is to have Dr. Mattson come up, because he did speak to this earlier.
Dr. Mattson. Welcome, Dr. Mattson.
Mr. Chair, members, Dirk Mattson, Director of Research and Assessment for the Department, Representative Dabney. The alignment index, as proposed in this bill, is not currently being done by any other state. Other states have that have done end of course have experienced through external research have experienced grade inflation, and so noted through you know, university research, etc. So Georgia is an example that comes to mind. Arkansas is another example that has gone to end of course as a requirement. And then they have found that if that is a portion of the grade, that passing the course, they start to see their letter grades increase in their across the state. So the concept of this alignment index is to try and deal with that at the outset as opposed to a post facto. It has not been done yet by anyone. The concept has been vetted with a number of national measurement and accountability experts, including our technical advisory committee, including the National Center for the Improvement of Educational Outcomes. All have had warm reception to the idea. They believe it's technically sound and can be done. There's certainly a number of details that need to be worked out on it. It would work very similar to how our growth index works, and that is that we would determine that alignment through a norm reference system. We would collect the data for the first couple, 3 years, and then based on that, similar to how we determine what is appropriate growth for students under our growth index for the state, we would come to some determinations about what is aligned and misaligned based on that data collection and making a norm-based decision.
Mr. Follow-up, Representative Devney.
So I'm hearing that there's a research base for the concern, but not a firm research or experiential base for the response.
Dr. Madsen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Devney, correct.
Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be quick. We don't have 9 months like the task force does, but I have some concern still with this number being so high, and it sounds to me like the task force went back and forth on it, and Commissioner Segrin said she went back and forth, and Representative Downey said he would support it for now. And you know, it just seems to me that we have tried this before. We had No Child Left Behind, and everyone was going to meet all these adequate yearly progress standards by 2014. And then we had the math standards, and we had to back off of that. And I know it's our tendency to want to have, you know, shoot for the pie in the sky, and then we back off. But to me, it seems to me we should learn our lesson and go the other way around and have a lower standard that can be moved up as we learn more about it, instead of experimenting with our kids who are the ones who are graduating or not graduating based on whatever this percent is. And I think the end of course and all the work of the task force is light years ahead of what we did before, where we just had everything be, you know, a test score. So this whatever we do is a huge improvement. But I would implore us not to experiment with our kids with a higher number by far than the average of other states, as well as when we have this alignment index, and then when we get to it, the idea of reimbursing higher ed if all this grand experiment doesn't work out. And that would be my question for Representative Mariani or Ms. Dr. Madsen, and that would be, if other states don't have an alignment index, do any other states ask K-12 to reimburse higher ed?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that. We can probably find out from folks here in the audience. But let me just say, if someone wants to come forward that knows the answer to that, that I welcome the committee's struggling with this issue on what the percentage is here. We still don't have, it's my understanding, we still don't have enough data collected in our nation, even relative to the comprehensive test impact. On student outcomes. I mean, it's at best, at least my reading, you know, contentious. There was a small report that came out of Stanford last year that indicated that there was a slight negative impact, particularly for certain groups, underrepresented student groups. But I think it's a field that still is under study. And there we're talking about comprehensive tests, you know, let alone end-of-course tests. I think that, you know, I think there's a logic here that says you should start, you know, and Mr. Rasmussen spoke to it, you should start at a number that you can build yourself up to. I think the principles still hold, whether it's 10, 15, or 25%, that you've got this dynamic happening with grading and the testing. And to some degree, you know, research isn't exactly helpful at this point in the year 2010 relative to this issue. Certainly certainly the ability of this body to make that decision. I would only say that, you know, the percentage that the task force came out with was honestly struggled with. This isn't a reason ultimately to do all things, but, you know, there is an alignment, if you will, between folks out in the broader community, the department. A number of us who engage in the task force, but I leave it to the will of this. I I will honor that, but I'd leave it to the Wellness Committee in terms of where they feel comfortable sending.
Well, follow up, Representative Grattan.
Just one last. Representative Mariani, you were on the task force. What would be your ideal number?
Representative Mariani.
She's pressing me now.
Uh-huh.
I would say, as you look out across the landscape, that 25% is the upper limit. There are very many other states that are at 25%. And there's a broad range, I think between 10 and 15%. That would put us more in a mainstream of where other states are at. Now, you know, those other states aren't using alignment indexes, and I know less about, you know, what kind of consequences are accruing to the systems here. So, you know, if I was running with the pack, I'd put it at 15%, but that's not a scientific answer on my part.
Representative Grattan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Mariani, 15% would have been your choice if you hadn't gone with the task.
Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I would, you know, obviously part of the dynamic here is it's built into the bill and the A6 amendment is for us to constantly vet through, to look at the data, to analyze that, and to consistently come back with recommendations. So regardless of where you start, you know, that process is going to be happening, and the department and the legislature will be constantly advised relative to a number of issues, including relative to the 25% benchmark.
Thank you.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is on this percentage that we've been talking, the bill currently says 25 and the A8 amendment says 10, but it says that it has to be that number. If that number were changed to 10, is there any reason that we couldn't have at least 10? So that if the teacher or the school said, well, we like 20% better, is there any reason that couldn't be higher? Does it have to be standard across the whole state, or do we really need to establish a floor?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Files, it's an intriguing thought, but I think you want to shoot for uniformity here. I don't think what we want to do is, and I know you're not intending this, but perpetuate different metrics across different systems that could lead to different approaches to, you know, student outcome, equity in student outcomes. I'm sure there's a better psychometrician answer for that, but I would argue that, you know, we're talking about state standards here after all. I think we should stick to a uniform metric.
To that point, Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, Representative Faust, I think consistency is critical here for the alignment index to function as we intend it to, but also remember that we're having experts look not only at the results of the tests and the alignment, they will be reflecting back on the test itself as they look at those results. So is the test testing what it is we intend it to test as we see how our students are performing? And we'll get reflections back from our teachers. Our math teachers and our biology teachers are going to be closely invested in whether that alignment is there in their experience of how the test functions in relation to their material. So there'll be a lot of constructive discussion, I think, at that level.
Members, we're going to take up one more testifier right now, and then we're going to go into some of the amendments, and then we'll start with the A8 amendment, Representative Norris's amendment after that. But I do want to call down Jenny Norlin Weaver from Edina Public Schools to be able to offer some testimony, as she is not someone who is a perennial at our meetings. We want to make sure we get her testimony in.
On occasion, I feel that way.
Great. Welcome. Please state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Norlin Weaver. I direct teaching and learning in the Edina schools, and I'm also speaking this morning on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Boy, you've had some wonderful conversations so far. I want to thank you for the opportunity to offer specifically support for the recommendations of the College and Career Readiness Policy Institute Working Group on Assessments and Accountability. That was originally represented to you as House File 3421. It's important to note that we must collectively continue to work to improve the performance of all of our students, and we are working hard to do that. The recommendations that were sent to the commissioner very clearly sought to ensure readiness for college and for work, and that's an end metric that we all support and share responsibility for. The proposal put forth by the committee is one we support as a pathway to assist us in that effort. As a district, and also as members of AMSD, we were provided multiple and quite transparent opportunities for input on the recommendations as they were generated. As an example, the team listened carefully when we spoke about the need for multiple measures as well as ways to include alternative pathways for college entrance, such as AP or IB performance considerations. We appreciated that greatly. The bill under consideration contains deviations from the recommendations as provided that causes some concerns. Many of those are being addressed in your conversations, and I'm greatly appreciative of the thoughtful nature of this deliberation. The significant deviation from the phased recommendations is one concern that we'd like to surface. The state must provide MDE with adequate time and funding in order to develop high-quality assessments with strong technical qualities for all subgroups. Our experience with the MCAs hasn't necessarily built confidence that that will be the case. We'd suggest that we need to implement the first three tests as proposed with fidelity, study, learn what the impacts of those assessments are rather than try and do all six more quickly. The lack of alignment in our current MCAs is one reason we are at the point where we are. Please don't allow for a repeat with a new set of assessments. Note that field testing, just one example of the aspect of a high-quality design process, takes a toll on school districts and the resources and the needs that we need to be spread out over time. So to roll out six assessments in a short period of time is that additional toll on what happens at the local level when we're trying to embed the items and we're trying to pilot so that the high-quality assessment product you want is the one that you're utilizing for decision-making. Please use the original phases recommendations as written on page 21 of the access report that Representative Mariani recommended to you. Please also ensure that the ongoing studies are conducted as per the recommendations on page 22 and conducted by an external evaluator. Language in the amendment by Representative Mariani takes into account these issues. I'd ask you to support that change. The access proposal included interim benchmark assessments that are useful to students and teachers working in a new assessment system. I want to highlight useful. That might be an important consideration. The removal of those formative assessments from the original recommendation is a major disappointment. Practices that are adopted to accelerate the education of children and youth should be really well supported by research. The formative assessments that we're talking about have substantial research behind them, which suggests the skillful use actually has greater impact on learning and achievement than lowering class sizes. If cost is the rationale for stripping them, please note that a better use of the funds proposed to develop phase two assessments is to ensure that that aspect of phase one development is accomplished first. At present, the MCAs aren't linked as students progress from one grade to another in such a way as to allow us the ability to accurately predict success in a subsequent grade. We firmly believe this is at least one major contributor in the achievement gaps that appear as students move through the system. Well-designed and aligned formative assessments provide the tools we require to be able to target intervention as well as to provide for acceleration. Please ensure that the formative and benchmark assessment tools are included in the bill. See page 18 of the access report. You've had some lively discussion already this morning about alignment. No one should be willing to live with misalignment between course grades and the comprehensive assessment of material from the same course. However, the remedial chargeback consequences in the bill are high to us, especially as we face no new and increased funding. The state and school districts should be provided at least a reasonable window after a misalignment is identified to research and remedy it before we're held to chargebacks. I'm appreciative of the conversation you're having around what that research process might look like, and I'd encourage you to continue. We struggle now to find adequate funds for intervention services. After recent funding cycles, we have nowhere else to divert these funds from other than staffing. Will the resulting larger class sizes assist in supporting the learning of students still enrolled in our schools? Will we be able to charge back out-of-state institutions, online or other, where our students might have taken coursework? Who will set the system in place, and at what cost to track and maintain the specific cost to and from a variety of schools for mobile students? We believe the alignment indices as proposed will force, in fact, some substantial reform in grading practices. The percentage of a student's final grade based on the end-of-course test should have some specific rationale and research and impact tied to it. Please continue that conversation. Please seek the research that might support it. Setting score ranges is noted in the recommendations and in Representative Mariani's amendment, and studying the statistical relationship to other indicators may be a help in accomplishing that. At a minimum, determine a point at which colleges must assess students using the same standards as school districts. Not currently the case, given the wide use of an assessment like the ACCUPLACER. Today, Minnesota schools using that instrument are allowed to admit students using whatever criteria they deem acceptable, assess them using an instrument we haven't been aligned to, and then declare the student in need of remediation. Something about the system hasn't made sense to many parents and freshmen as they enter the system. It's worth a different and aligned conversation as well. It makes no more sense to attempt to charge the costs back to a school district, since nowhere in the mix does the college have an accountability for the process. We might save money, everyone money, if we did as some other states do and just require the use of the college entrance exam for freshman course placement. Please set score ranges as recommended in the Access Report, page 20, to ensure quality and psychometric integrity. Strip the stipulation that school districts would pay for student remedial courses where sites, grades, and graduation test scores are deemed misaligned until further research on the impacts of these recommendations is complete. If we're determined in the end to set up a situation that will deny some students diplomas on our current trajectory, please consider funding diploma-seeking efforts until age 22 or even 25. We have a student in our system right now who's still being held to the BST who wants a high school diploma desperately. Came in as an ELL learner in the middle school. He's past that ELL window. We're not sure what the next step is for him, and we don't have remedy in statute to address it. The economic consequences of underprepared graduates to our workforce and tax base are the very reasons to support accountability policies. Those are the same reasons to ensure the employability of these youth. Finally, we raise questions about why a representative committee can be set into the place by the commissioner, who I have very high regard for, I'd like to note. Noting they've worked diligently to make recommendations they arrived at through compromise, and then when those recommendations come to the legislature, take extreme departures from the work as submitted. The considerations we seek are those that allow us to be accountable for student learning and suggest the state is also responsible as a support. In that spirit, I ask you for your consideration of these requests and related amendments. Please seek to use the recommendations as provided in the Access Report. Thank you for your deliberation and advocacy on behalf of the students of Minnesota. I appreciate greatly the work that you do.
Questions from members? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to have you here, Ms. Norlin Weaver. I appreciate your testimony. But my question is to the 25%. Were you questioning whether that was a research-based recommendation, because that was the recommendation that did come from the task force after considerable look at practice and research.
Mr. Chair and members, so I am questioning it from the perspective of I'd like to see some research behind it. In fact, it would be probably the greatest personal departure I would have from the Access recommendations. I will acknowledge, however, that I believe the work of the task force, given the transparency, given the wide variety of people around that table, I can live with the recommendations of that task force given the process that they engaged in. I would like additional research around that particular measure. I don't believe there's specific research we can utilize to support it at this point.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Representative Nornes, would you like to move the A8 amendment?
Mr. Chair, first of all, I'd like to thank the witness, Jordan Rasmussen, for coming to our committee today. It's a long ways to drive, and he has the option of either being in school or here, so that's a major decision. And I think it's resulted in some very good discussion today, and I think that we, at least I understand it a lot better than I did before. Initially, as you see in the amendment, it was 10%. We talked about 20%. I guess, members, because of what I've heard this morning, and I've talked, I've heard a lot of discussion about this, I would yield to the task force and their decision, and for that reason, withdraw my amendment.
Okay, members, Representative Nornes withdraws the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nornes.
I had one thing. I guess I would also concur that additional research would be very much appreciated, I think, as we proceed.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. Representative Greiling, to that.
Mr. Chair, would it be in order for me to offer the A8 amendment with an oral amendment?
Put your name on it.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A8 amendment, and my oral amendment would be to change the 10 to 15 per the preference of Chair Mariani.
All right, Representative Greiling is offered the A8 amendment, and she's incorporating a change of 10 to 15 on line 1.2. To that amendment, we have a couple of representatives, Representative Brennert, and then Representative Mariani will ask for your statement on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to speak against that amendment. The discussion that we've already heard here at the table does indicate that we do have a strong desire in understanding more about the research base for the measure. However, the task force appointed by the legislature considered this issue over a more than six-month period with very vigorous debate, very broad professional input, and this recommendation came from what I consider to be probably the best professional judgment in our state in terms of those who sat at the table. So I think we would do an injustice to the recommendations of the Access Committee to change that measure without further research evidence.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose the amendment for the same reasons. I am, however, comfortable with this committee wrestling with that issue. I mean, we know that to some degree, we're dealing with a bit of a guess here, and we are dealing with a number that puts us at the top, along with a couple of other states relative to that percentage. I am comforted by the entire construct of the bill that creates this dynamic, calling out experts, that constantly allows us to look at data, to analyze that data, and to not implement key either consequences or stages until such time as we've had a good further analysis of that data. But I am most comfortable with where the committee wants to go with this. I think it's a good, open, honest discussion here.
Any other discussion from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A8 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Division.
A division has been called. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed, raise your hand.
Better with the voice vote. No, some changed that voted with the voice.
6-14, the amendment does not pass. And that was how I was going to rule, but I thought I had good hearing today. Okay. Representative Faust. The A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to amend my amendment by deleting lines 1.2 to 1.9 so that all that's left is 1.1 and 1.10.
All right. Representative Faust moves the A7 amendment with just lines 1.9 and 1.10. So he deletes lines 1.2 to 1.8. Oh, you need 1.8, I am told.
I'm sorry. Then I will change my amend my amendment to amend that, yeah.
So Representative Faust is deleting lines 1.2 to 1.7. Representative Faust, would you like to explain the amendment?
All right. What this does is it takes out the chargeback to the schools if a student needs to take a remedial class. And that's my understanding, anyway, of the amendment. And I just think that to do that is really unfair to the school. I think there's a lot of times that it's more the child's fault than it is the school's fault or the parent's fault or somebody else's fault other than the school. And so I don't think that it's right to put all of the burden on the school for that. They certainly are one of the people, you know, one of the entities that is involved in that when something like this happens. But to say they're the only ones, I think, is certainly not the right thing to do. We've tried this before and decided that it wasn't worth doing any longer, and we walked away from it. And so I think that this is just going back to trying something that didn't work the first time, and there's really no point in trying it again.
Questions or comments from members? Representative Norton, then I'll go to Representative Demmer. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to speak in support of this, and I do so reluctantly because I was looking through the Minnesota Business Partnership's comments about the need for remediation. But until and unless we're ready to limit students' choices, this is an issue. We allow in our school district students to choose the type of math courses that they take or the type of reading courses that they take. And if we allow them to choose courses that will not make them college ready, and we still offer them, and we do, in our school districts, then to hold the school accountable when students still have that choice, I think is a disservice to our schools. And I'm not saying we shouldn't address this, but I think there's a different way, which might mean restricting the type of courses that students can take in order to raise the level of achievement of our students.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought you were going to call for the vote. That's why I spoke up. I didn't know you were counting him. I got a quick question, first of all, and I'm sorry I was a little late. Did we pass the A6 already?
Yes.
The bill? Is it appropriate that we're amending the A6 amendment? Shouldn't we be just amending the bill now? I don't know.
My understanding is that is what we are doing at this point with the A7 amendment, is that we are amending the bill that has been amended.
Well, this is technical. The language of the amendment says that we're moving to amend the A6 amendment. I don't know if that's technically.
I think it's correct.
I don't know.
That is, yeah, you are correct in that. So saying that it should just move to amend House File 3421 as amended.
Okay, now I'll ask a real question.
All right.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right.
You know, in looking at this, what we're at, and I'm to be honest about it, I'm not. I don't know. I have ambivalence or some cause to start asking schools to reimburse higher education, that sort of thing. We already have 30% remediation going on, and it's kind of a problem right now. And I'm I'm still having a hard time from last year when we lowered our standards and decided not to hold the kids accountable anymore. And now we're talking about lowering them some more again. And but you know, this is what this is talking about reimbursement if they're highly misaligned. And again, highly misaligned means that they're giving A's to kids who are not doing well on standardized testing and that sort of thing. That means we've got a misalignment with the grades from what the kids are really doing and what they're learning. And I think we still need to keep some levels accountability, I guess. If they're highly misaligned, that simply means they're just giving lots of high grades to lots of kids and they're not really learning the content. So if we're going to go this misalignment route, and if we trust the misalignment to tell us something, then I think we should hold schools accountable to stay aligned. Otherwise, if they're highly misaligned, maybe they should have some accountability. So I guess I'll speak against the amendment at this point in time, Mr. Chair. We got some more work to do on these sort of things, but I'm going to speak against it for that reason.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps a bit to Representative Demmer, but it's a larger question. If I recall correctly, Dr. Mattson came up and said that there is no research base for the alignment index. And so here we're taking something that may be a good idea, but doesn't have a research base, and holding schools accountable to the outcome of that, financially accountable, and taking money away from the schools, kind of that NCLB punitive thing that on the federal level they're trying to move away from. So I appreciate the concern about remediation. It's certainly where I spent a chunk of my early college days. but it seems like we're reaching in and punishing the schools without a research base. And we're also, I'm not aware that we allow school districts to bill higher education back for the staff development costs of first-year teachers who come out of teacher prep programs not fully ready to be in the classroom without more training. So I guess I think this is one worth revisiting in a few years after the system is implemented and we see where things are at that point and where remediation numbers are at and the like, but not now.
Members, it's the chair's prerogative to try and wrap up this amendment, then we will take the other amendments as well as testimony tomorrow. So we will continue this, so we will lay it over. But I do want to vote on this amendment. Representative Demmer.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Representative Demmer. I don't disagree. It just seems like we keep moving the bar around anyway, so I don't even know in 2 or 3 years if we'll have this anymore either, because we'll change things. Or somebody will, those of us who maybe aren't here. I'd be curious, can we get the commissioner to comment quickly on this? This is part of something that's...
While the commissioner is coming down, let's... Representative Mariani, would you like to comment on the amendment itself as well?
Well, Mr. Chair, I should just wait. I think the committee needs to talk this through. I think it's an important concept here. This did not come forward from the task force. I will state, however, the task force on page 20 did state that once we move to phase two, we can consider additional sanctions as well as additional supports. So it's not inconsistent in generally with the task force's recommendation to consider as you're moving forward with this approach. But the task force was silent on this particular approach. And then, Mr. Chair, I just couldn't help. I just have to say this. Mr. Chair, members, we have not changed the standards or lowered the standards in this state. The standards remain high in the state of Minnesota. We're still recognized as a state with high standards relative to virtually every other state in the union. What we did do is change the assessment for a short period of time of the math grad precisely so we can have this discussion in this session. And I just want to clarify for members that there's no one in this legislature that has ever supported lowering standards on either side of the aisle, and this proposal does not do that.
Commissioner Segrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would encourage you to keep the language in the bill as it is. Here's why. As I, looked at the report from the group and tried to reflect everyone's concerns, there were people that were still concerned that there was not enough teeth, if you will, or accountability. But I also recognize that we're going through a transition period where we need to do this carefully. And so when I looked at some of the suggestions by other people that wanted more teeth, I tried to kind of say, well, what would be kind of a common sense and fair thing? So as I talked about, as we've been talking about having some balance, and it's not about putting all of the responsibility on the student, because we do have classes that are being, now this is only going to be for math and for science. It's not for reading. It's math and science that this is going to be focused on. We do have kids that are taught in classes that were supposed to be an algebra class, and they're not. Our science class that is not aligned to the standards. And it's not fair for them to be in a class where they're expected to take an end-of-course test and it's not reflective of what they were taught. That's not fair. And so in the process that that I looked at, there's this 3-year transition period anyway as we're moving into the new tests. And then there was the language about a two-year period of time consecutive where if there was misalignment, there's going to be a report to the parents that their student was in a highly misaligned, now please remember that, highly misaligned class. So you really have a period of 4 years where you're going to be getting feedback. We, being the school district, is going to be getting feedback about these two courses that are required for graduation to say, you know what, you continue to have highly misaligned grading practices in alignment with what is being taught for the student. And so that's not fair. And we need to make sure that you are doing what's right for the kid, too. And consequently, then, if there is any student that then enrolls in a class at only 1 year after they graduate from high school that is either a math or a science class that is a general class, and they need a remediation course, only one, my language, I'm not sure what, I think yours may be a little bit broader, but I said only one time would a district be liable for a remediation cost for that student. I thought that was modest. I expect that there probably be less than 1% of the students in the state that would actually get remediation, and that is probably less than, I don't know, maybe 5,000 students in the whole state of Minnesota that are going through high school. Very, very small numbers of students. But it gives us a little bit of some consequence. It is not a huge punitive consequence. And we also have the ability now to work through how this would be crafted, how we would do it, to take into consideration maybe some of the little glitches that are in and out of our systems. But I would encourage you to leave it in. I think that it's fair for both the student and the school district. It provides all of us with that transparency that we need to be serious about these two courses. That's it. And it's not about all courses. It's not about all things that all kids take. But to me, I tried to strike a balance of the concerns of people that, you know, wanted higher consequences and higher stakes. And so I would ask you to please keep it in. I think that it was a very small and narrowly drawn consequence that I think should be there.
Members, I have three individuals who would like to comment towards this and looking at, are we, after those three comments, ready to vote on this today, or would you like to wait till tomorrow to vote on this amendment? And so I'm looking as the good teacher, those head nods from those those individuals. Are we okay? All right, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And gosh, I'm listening to this debate. I have to convince, I think I'm firmly of two minds on this particular issue. And it's a tough one. I was prepared to say I wanted to associate myself with comments made by Representative Norton regarding choices our students are able to make in terms of courses and their rigor and preparation for these tests. And on the other hand, I think the alignment issue is a significant one. I guess probably my concern right now is that when the time frame in which these end of course tests are going to kick in, and then they'll look back on misalignment, there's a gap of a couple of years. And what are we going to do for those kids who come through? Again, you know, my youngest child is going to be in that class. She's, you know, God willing, going to be in college after this look back takes place, and if she's had to do remediation, you know, there's really no assistance or action on her, others in her situation behalf. And finally, I would prefer actually to see the remediation go directly to the student as opposed to the institution of higher learning, and it's going to go with that student wherever they choose to go. So I don't know that any of those comments helped me make a decision on this amendment, but I just wanted to raise those points.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mine's really a nuts and bolts type question, and I think the commissioner would probably be best to answer this. When it's decided that a student needs remediation in our higher ed institutions, is it the ACCUPLACER that decides that?
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair and members, generally it is an ACCUPLACER that decides that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Representative Dietrich.
Follow up then, thank you. So my question is then, is our end of course tests aligned to the AccuPlace?
Commissioner Segrin.
Madam Chair, the end of course test is not aligned to the AccuPlacer. That's a conversation that I think this group had as far as, you know, college and career ready standards. The AccuPlacer varies, you know, from even, I think, institution to institution, right, whether they use the AccuPlacer or not. Sometimes they just, you know, they do look at coursework and don't require it. But, Madam Chair, I think that that's something that is not exactly part of this this discussion, but...
Representative Dietrich.
Okay, so the issue, I think, is real. 30% of the kids taking remedial classes, and we've known this information for quite some time. Mm-hmm. And so on one hand, I really appreciate a solution or a potential solution, and I think that that's good. But, you know, what frustrates me is, first of all, is the once again, I feel like we're creating another misalignment, you know, unfair expectations based on unfair, bad information, a bad process. I shouldn't say that. But either way, let me go on. But and we have identified this problem quite some time ago, and we have asked the higher ed institutions to speak to the K-12 system and get those standards and expectations aligned, and that just doesn't happen. We have a P-16 committee, and they have been working for so long, and they still haven't been able to, I don't feel like, address this issue. And I'm just not sure, it is still a problem, it still needs some work, but I'm just not so sure after this discussion that this is something I want to support right now. But I'm very interested in a solution.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Segrin.
In regard to the 30% remediation, that 30% remediation includes a lot of students who have not gone back to school for 2, 3, 4 years. So you've got a mix of people that are in that 30% remediation number,
right,
which we have all said.
Right.
I remember the legislation we had a few years ago that, oh, the, you know, the districts are going to have to pay for mediation, you know, and this is 30%, and this is terrible, and it's all the K-12 district's fault. And we all agree that that was not right, because there are non-traditional students. There are students that goofed off and then didn't go back to school. Well, and are there just folks like you and I that haven't been in a math class for a while, maybe want to go back, but we have to, you know, do some brush up. So we have to take a developmental or remediation course. So all of that is lumped into that 30%. That's why I narrowly crafted this to say that it would only be in those two subject areas that are reflective of the end of course, so that if there was high misalignment, that those students would have a chance, at least if they ended up in, enrolling in a technical school, a community college, a four-year university, and they find that if they take the AccuPlacer or whatever the admittance or admissions criteria to that general course, that they weren't making the grade, that then, you know, there was some account, because there was some high misalignment about the instruction that kid received in the first place. Representative Loon mentioned her concern about her daughter who might pass, you know, the test and then a couple years later, not be ready to do this. If she's passed that test, if you pass the course, you should have a high degree of certainty that you're going to be fine when you get into college. So it's where you have high, and that student would likely be in a class that was aligned also. But when you have, we need to remember the high misalignment when you have a kid that was not instructed according to the standards that were expected. Then we need to hold the district accountable for that. It's only in those very narrow circumstances. And I'm not going to say anymore. Mr. Chair.
Last statement, Representative Faust, and then we'll go to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Norton and Representative Dietrich for supporting this amendment. When I offered it, I didn't even realize there were so many good reasons to vote for it. But there's so many that this should be an easy vote, and that I request a roll call, Mr. Chair.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering very quickly if Ms. Larson can tell me whether on lines 4.2 and 4.3, where it says any Minnesota institution of higher ed, would that include private for-profit institutions?
I am getting the nod. Yes, it does. Members, before we proceed with the roll call, please make sure that you take all of your materials and place it back in your folder, and in that folder then will be carried over till tomorrow, and you'll have all of the necessary amendments there. So please help out our pages that way. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani.
Aye.
Kath.
Aye.
Abler.
No.
Benson. Reinert.
Aye.
Dabney.
Aye.
Demmer.
No.
Dietrich.
Aye.
Depke.
No.
Downey.
No.
Faust.
Yes.
Greiling.
Yes.
Loon.
No.
McFarlane. Murdoch.
No.
Newton. Newton.
Aye.
Norness. Obermuller. Norton.
Aye.
Obermuller.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Slawick.
No.
Swales.
No.
Benson. McFarlane. Norness.
Eight, the amendment is adopted. Members, we will lay this over until tomorrow, and with that, the hearing is adjourned.